CityTalk 105.9, official podcast, online at citytalk.fm. CityTalk 105.9, the best of Roy Basnett.
Hello and welcome to this week's podcast from The Roy Basnett Show. Each week we will be bringing you some classic moments from our national award-winning programme on CityTalk 105.9, The Voice of Liverpool. This week we start off talking about a dilemma which affects virtually everyone, remembering things. How can you remember more and forget less? Well, I don't have the answers, but one man who claims he does is Rob Easterway, and he joined us on the show to tell us more.
CityTalk 105.9, the best of Roy Basnett.
Right then, Rob. I've got to say, I mean, a lot of the interviews that I do, I always take something from them. It's an education for me, but this most definitely relates to me because I have major issues when it comes to remembering things. Is this a hereditary condition? And if not, what causes me to feel like this or have this problem?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't say it's a hereditary thing for most people. I think it's perhaps an age thing, and an age thing that strikes quite young. I reckon that by the age of 30, most people begin to start thinking about memory, and many people begin to start worrying that there's something wrong with their memory that they're forgetting, and they start panicking about it as if it's the first signs that they're heading downhill and so on. So it's a very widespread and shared concern,
so,
I think.
So in terms of age, then, it can start pretty young, because, I mean, I would have thought, you know, I could put that question to you, is it true that your memory gets worse as you get older?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is something that everyone's concerned about, and it is true in a way that we all can see that clearly, you know, very old people very often have big problems with memory and so on, but it would be too simplistic to say, you know, you start with a brilliant memory and then it just goes downhill from there, because if you look around at a bunch of 10-year-old children, you'll see them forgetting things all over the place. You know, they leave their clothes and they forget to bring them, they forget what they learned at school and so on. And some things in life actually get better. Our memory gets better as we get older. So it's not like our whole memory just goes downhill. And there are some things, I mean, it's quite encouraging, really, that if you picture a 50-year-old against a 20-year-old to learn certain facts, for example, often the 50-year-olds will remember more because they understand where the facts fit in. They're cleverer at remembering, and that sort of makes up for the fact that their brains may not be quite as sharp as they were when they were young.
So what you're saying is there's a method of developing a good memory.
Well, there is. And you know, the reason why we've written this book is that people are worried about memory, and they want to know in everyday life what they can do about it and how we can address their concerns. And so we just want to be honest about, you know, some things are harder to deal with than others, but there are strategies for making you less worried about your memory and dealing with the things that matter to you. And, you know, there are a whole range of lifestyle things you can do and techniques you can use. And some people think the techniques are brilliant. Others say it's far too much effort for me. But, you know, there's something for everyone there, and there are things, there are steps you can make. And, you know, the number one thing, as far as I'm concerned, is to help people be less worried about their memory. And in a way, the good thing about that is if you're worried about your memory, it actually gets worse. So it's a kind of vicious circle. So if you can feel confident and say, actually, my memory's not so bad, your memory will actually get better without even having to do anything else.
Could it be compared, then, in the same way as an athlete would train for whatever sport he's involved with? It's the same with the brain, and you've got to exercise it.
Yeah, I think that's a good analogy. And one of the basic things that helps you to remember things is just testing yourself to recall. So there's a classic thing we might talk about a bit more, but one of the top obsessions people have is forgetting names. We all, as we get older and meet more people, we're worried about, oh, I forgot, can't remember names.
Yeah, that's me.
And there's a little technique that I use and that's recommended in the book, which is about if you're going to a social function, especially one where there's lots of couples there and you know who's going to be there, then before you go, rehearse the names of the people. You know, what is the name of the wife of so-and-so or husband, you know, who goes with them? Because there's nothing worse. You turn up and when it's a couples event, you're going to have to be introducing people to each other. You're going to have to remember their names. But if you rehearse it before, if you test yourself on names, then those names come back almost instantly. And it's because we don't rehearse names that's part of the reason why we don't, you know, we start forgetting them. And it applies to so many things. If you keep testing yourself and testing your memories and so on, they keep much fresher than if you just leave them and just hope that they're all going to be there and instantly accessible.
Yeah. See, and one of the other names is a problem for me. It's not so much, I know a lot of people, sometimes it's hard to recall them all, but one of the things that I've found that I'm terrible for doing this is I'll ask somebody a name.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not registered with me at all. What have you got any suggestions as to why that might happen?
Well, it's because when you meet them for the first time, there are all sorts of other things going on in your head. You're partly worrying about, can they hear you? Are you looking okay? You want to seem confident. You know, you're registering their face for the first time. So they say their name and you're not concentrating on it. And there's a classic, slightly American technique, which, if you can bear it, it's really good to do, which is when they say their name, you repeat it back, because the very act of saying it has kind of registered it a bit in your mind. Now, the second tip is, having repeated it back, within a minute, maybe within 30 seconds, you should say it again. And you might get it wrong, but it's not nearly as embarrassing getting it wrong then as if you say 5 minutes later you get it wrong. And the fact you've done it twice, you've said it twice, massively improves your chance of remembering it. And, you know, salesmen take that further. Just keep on using it again and again and again. It starts getting a bit over the top, but it helps them to not forget the name. So, you know, that we're just not registering it. And saying a name is a simple technique for helping fix it.
And obviously this applies to other areas. I mean, because it's not just names. It could be places. It could be anything, really. The principle of saying it and lodging it in your mind is going to work in other areas.
Exactly. And if you really want to learn it, like you learned, you know, if you had to learn facts at school, you write them down, you draw pictures to help you associate, and then you get a friend to test you, you know, and it does come back. And it's just in adult, we tend not to sort of do things like that because it feels all a bit too methodical and rigorous. But actually, if you really do want to remember these things, then that is as good as any technique that's going.
Another one, now that we're talking about it, another one of my little methods, if it's like a number or something that I want to remember, I always think to myself, say for the sake of argument, the number was 1,940.
Yeah.
I try to think of something that 19 and 40 that's relevant to me in my life.
Yeah.
And that way I find that it's remembered. I even do that with names, if I break the name into two bits.
Yeah.
You know, that's another method that works for me.
Exactly. And actually, you're saying it works for you. It's very important, because we all develop our own little tricks and techniques. And it's important to go with techniques that you like, and even if it's your favorite that other people don't use. And I quite agree with you about numbers, because people do need to remember numbers for some things, especially things like PIN numbers. You know, you're not allowed to write them down. And the technique you just mentioned, splitting them into pairs of digits, is a really good one. It's what the French use for telephone numbers. They always split telephone numbers into pairs.
All right.
And then, you know, as you said, 1940, you know, think of, well, 1940 was a year, of course. That was a good number, but you split it into 19 and 14. You might think, well, I remember when I was 19, that's when I first went to college or whatever. And
of course, 40
is the number of next door house or whatever, you know. But you think of something in real life that relates to those numbers, and you will remember the number much better. And that's a great technique.
It's got to be worthwhile.
Yeah.
We're talking about memory this morning with, I forgot your name, is it? Rob Easterway. Let's have a look at a couple of myths, if that's okay.
Yeah.
I've heard it said that we only use somewhere in the region of 10% of our brain's capacity. Is that true?
It's almost certainly not true. And no one's quite sure where this story came from. It's thought that maybe once, when he was talking about the brain, Albert Einstein said something about, you know, if only we used more of our brains than we use, you know, than 10% we use, we'd be so much better. But he was just making a little joke.
Right.
But it's sort of become this thing that we don't actually use most of our brain. But if you put people now in an MRI scanner and watch the brain's activity, you'll quickly see that all parts of the brain get used, but not simultaneously. If you used 100% of your brain at any time, you'd have the most horrendous epileptic seizure and you'd kind of collapse. So you can only use bits at a time. But I think this 10% of the brain thing is sort of useful, just as a metaphor for saying there are things you can do to make better use of your brain, to structure information and tap into it the way it likes to work. But certainly it's nonsense to say there's 90% of your brain that is completely, like, dead and not being tapped into. Not true.
And within that, obviously, when I would hazard a guess that the brain is pretty much like the hard drive of a computer, and everything that you put into the computer is going to be stored there, whether you use it or not. And applying that way of thinking to the brain, is it true that every important event that we've experienced is stored somewhere in the brain?
The answer to that is almost certainly no. But the brain and the way it works, you know, you can use this analogy with computers a bit. Like, we do sort of have a hard drive and a short-term drive and, like, floppy disks of information that we can store elsewhere, like, which is books or diaries or whatever. But the brain, yeah, it doesn't, in many ways, it works in a very peculiar way of making associations and connections. And after a while, connections do die off and memories fade, and the brain's really good at lumping together. You know, if you see, you know, 100 different tower blocks, your brain doesn't say, I'm going to memorize all 100 tower blocks. It just says, right, that fits into the category of tower blocks I've seen, that looks a bit like what I've seen before. So it sort of, it produces these things that are sort of a vague memory, which is good enough to say, oh, I recognize that, I've seen something like that before. It notices things that are very different, but you know, we all think we can remember things we did, anecdotes from childhood, and actually there's lots of evidence that stories that we're convinced by, when you present the facts, you know, you research and to see what actually happened, how often these memories are wrong, and people are convinced that, you know, I sat next to little Johnny in class, turns out little Johnny wasn't even in your class, and people begin to think, well, someone's got the wrong facts out, but it's not true. So the mind is very strange in the way it changes memories to suit it. But largely, it doesn't matter. But it's just peculiar.
It is a peculiar thing. And a lot of times, I mean, I've never been able to explain this, but a lot of times what I've found is that I'll have a flashback in my mind and it doesn't stay there very long. And it becomes frustrating because I know it's obviously relevant to something that's happened to me in life. Mm. And then it disappears within seconds. And I think, what was I thinking about then?
Yeah, well, you know, these things are fascinating. And as long as they are fascinating as opposed to disturbing or worrying, it's fine. And, you know, they're still doing so much research into the brain and trying to work out how it works. But these things are frustrating if it's a flashback or it's like a tip of the tongue thing where you think, oh, there's a memory there and I can't quite grasp it and I know what that thing feels like. And that is when sort of something moves from being interesting to being frustrating because you know a fact and you can't grab it. And that's a well-known phenomenon. We all suffer from it. And there are, you know, there are ways of overcoming it. So.
Well, we're talking about memory this morning based on a book which Rob has written called Improve Your Memory Today. And it obviously sounds very good to me there. I've got to ask this one as well. Does food affect our memory?
Yeah, well, you'd think so from the stories that come out time and again. The press is always full of, you know, a new food, this food will improve your memory. There's ones I can think of, you know, there's some natural herbs and so on. Sage, which of course sounds like a very wise herb. And there was a belief for a while that if you eat sage, it improves your memory. Well, by and large, food and drugs, neither of them will actually improve your memory. You know, so before you consume them, your memory's like 8 out of 10. You take these drugs and it suddenly goes up to 10 out of 10. That hardly happens, except with some foods that sort of boost your brain energy levels short term. So having a bar of chocolate can improve your performance in a memory test within half an hour of eating the bar of chocolate. But it's almost the other way around with food, that a healthy diet will stop your brain from degenerating or will help it to preserve its ability at memorizing. So the thing about food is kind of upside down. It's eat well, eat a healthy diet, don't eat fatty foods that kill the brain and you know, lots of alcohol and so on, and you can have a better chance of a good memory when you're older. And if you do want to kill off your brain, you know, eating burgers and drinking 10 pints of beer a night is a very good way of destroying your brain.
So the alcohol affects it then? The alcohol can have a very negative effect on
your
memory?
Yes. There was a study, I believe, done in Australia which showed, you know, alarming rates of degeneration of memory of a group of blokes and their alcohol consumption was much higher than in other countries where memory was better. So, you know, there is lots of evidence that with alcohol damaging memory, and increasing evidence of drugs having memory and mind impairing things. You know, it's not very well known what the long term effects are of some of these drugs, but you know, by and large, I'd say, you know, if you're wondering whether cannabis is a good idea or not, I think there is lots of evidence to say there could be some harm down the line and memory, amongst many other things.
See, that question that I put to you there about going back to the food there was based on my own kind of personal experience, because I used to find that when I worked for another radio station, and I do it here at the radio station I'm at now, flapjacks always, I'm not saying they improved my memory, but they certainly made my brain sharper. Some people will be laughing at that this morning, but I mean, I certainly felt more aware and more positive, if you like, as a result of actually eating that particular type of food.
Yes, I think that's true. That and whether it's a real effect or whether it's a feel good effect,
like a placebo, you mean?
It really doesn't matter. If it makes you feel good, and it sort of comes back to something we were saying earlier about, you know, worrying less.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a classic effect of caffeine. Caffeine sharpens your mind, and any food that's got caffeine-related, you know, elements in it is going to make you feel sharp for a short period of time, and that's going to improve your performance in lots of ways,
right.
Or could,
right.
You know. So a flapjack, bit of sugar, glucose, yeah, I can see that.
Mm.
But also, if you're looking forward to it, if you've been craving it, and then you have it, you're feeling good in yourself.
So you're getting the old endorphins released and things
like
that.
Yeah, well, you know, the body reacts in all sorts of real physical ways, even if the thing itself isn't necessarily, you know, all it's doing is making you feel good in your head.
Mm.
But if that helps you, then it will, you know, it could improve your memory easily in a test and you know, in other circumstances.
I'm just thinking there that, you know, when releasing the endorphins is obviously going to sharpen up the memory and sharpen up the mind in that, and, you know, the affections of a good woman would probably go a long way, so perhaps maybe that's what we need to bring it into the workplace, if you've got women who just have the design.
It
works both ways, of course, for the fellas as well.
Well, exactly. You know, you have to, there's all sorts of interesting tests, again, have been done on when people's memories are at their sharpest and what part of their life they most remember.
Yeah.
And perhaps not a coincidence that it's often people are at their most memory receptive and have sharpest memories of time in their late teens, early 20s, when, you know, all these relationship things are happening. And, you know, of course, there's a classic thing about what tunes you remember.
Mm-hmm.
And tunes do stick in the memory. But certain, you know, the tunes that often most resonate with people are the ones that they associate with, you know, romantic moments in their life.
It's a very good point there.
And these things stick, but it's because your emotions are on a high and the things that are around all relate in. So tap into it. You know, these are good. If you can exploit these things, then if you want to remember something, do it in a romantic.
That's right. From a bloke's point of view, ship a good woman into the workplace. You'll be promoted before you know it.
And you know, there's another thing. You know, in terms of partners of either sex, you know, it's we tend to think when we're thinking about memory, it's all about us and our brains. But actually, you know, speaking for myself, my memory is a lot to do with me, but also it's a lot to do with my wife. She remembers a lot of stuff too. So I don't have to remember everything. If there's someone else who can help you to remember, it does take some of the pressure off.
Mm.
So let's not all get too obsessed with, we have to all individually remember everything.
Right.
And, you know, it's not a partner. It could also be the internet. You know, we can look stuff up that we couldn't look up before. So, you know, technology is helping our memories and it's getting better. And as we get older, there's going to be all sorts of electronic devices that help us to remember better that didn't exist 50 years ago.
Absolutely. Well, outside, and obviously we don't want to preempt too much that's in the book because people won't go out and buy it.
Mm.
But if it's the case, let's see if we've got a couple of tips that you would offer as basics that people could do, perhaps maybe in their everyday life, that would significantly improve the memory capacity.
I mean, going back to what matters most to most people, we've touched on remembering names, and that's critical. And in addition to these basic things of repeating names and saying again and so on, with names or with other things, turning something you want to remember into an image makes it, or tapping into your other senses makes it more memorable. So if you want to remember a shopping list, and let's keep it really simple. Let's suppose you just needed to go and buy a pint of milk, some leeks, and some toothpaste. Well, they're three unconnected things. How are you going to remember it? So there's a little game you can play, which I still use myself, and it works. You milk, leeks, toothpaste. Imagine a milkman, and he's brushing his teeth. It's a bit stupid. Doesn't matter. Stupid things are good for the memory. So imagine a milkman brushing his teeth, and then he looks at his bottle. It's got some leeks in it. So, you know, it's dripping milk all over the place. There's a little image. I'll now go to the shop, and I've got this stupid image of this milkman brushing his teeth with the leaky bottle, and hopefully that's enough for me to remember those three things for the next few hours. And little games like that are good to play, and they remind you that your memory can work. So that's one thing I'd say. Another thing that we haven't touched on is, but it really interests me, especially as I see, you know, my mum getting older and struggling with memory, is how important as you get older, remembering what you did when you were younger becomes. It's never too early, I don't think, to invest some time in building your memories. So, and the classic thing is building photo albums and things like that, and people love to have photos. But here's some sort of more creative things you could do. What about going down your street and taking some photos of how it looks today, the everyday things you take for granted? Because in 30 years' time, it'll be rebuilt, the trees will all have grown, the cars will be different, and you won't remember. And those things, you know, we tend to photograph people, but we don't photograph things. So that's one thing. And another thing is, you know, if you have an answer phone at home, wait till the tape is full and then keep that tape. Put it away, especially if it's an ordinary cassette, and play it back in 20 years. And it'll remind you, those are the people who used to ring me. Those are the things they used to talk about. And it'll really bring back memories in a way that, you know, a static picture might not. And it's, you know, these little things we don't think of until it's too late.
No, we don't, because obviously, you know, whatever, you may get to a situation in life later where, you know, you can't do a whole lot and all you're left is your memories. So you want them as intact as possible.
Absolutely. And it's a great thing to be able to tap into memories and to be able to share them with others. And, if, you know, then they'll understand more about who you are. So these are things that, you know, you can't do when you're when you're 85 and you can't recall them all. So if you do it when you're, while you think of it, and I know these things take time, but it's not a bad little hobby to have.
Yeah, it's just like a bit of archiving going on, really, isn't it?
It is.
One question I've got to ask you just before we go. Sleep. What about sleep? Does sleep affect the memory? And if so, what can we do? How much sleep do we need?
Well, the answer is really quite a commonsensical one, of course, which is you just, you know, if you're tired, your brain will work less well. Sleep is good for refreshing the mind and everything else. There is no right answer for how much sleep you need because it varies from person to person. But certainly, you know, lack of sleep can be linked with stress and with, you know, just generally being wound down and so on. And those are not good things for memory. So you can, you know, the more you live a healthy lifestyle, the more you get a good night's sleep and everything else. It's going to just help to get your brain performing as it should be. And that's where good memory comes from.
Okay, then, Rob, well, tell us quickly, if you would, please, a little bit about your book and any websites where people can find out more information.
Well, the book is called Improve Your Memory Today by myself, Rob Eastaway, with Dr. Hilary Jones of GMTV. You can, I don't actually have any websites to link into on memory off the top of my head, but the book itself should be available just about all bookshops and Amazon and anywhere else you like.
Great stuff. Well, listen, Rob, been great speaking to you. I feel as though I've learned something today. I just hope I can remember it.
I hope so. Okay.
Great stuff, Rob. Thanks for that, mate.
I do too. City Talk 105.9,
the best of Roy Basnett. Rob Eastaway there with his theories on improving your memory. Each Friday morning, we have our weekly Beyond the Dark show, looking at all elements of the paranormal. We get lots and lots of requests for ghost stories, and we have found a man who not only reads them, but he writes them as well. So here he is with a spooky tale from my hometown of Widnes.
Well, this was a story that was given to me by a lady who's now in her early 80s who lives in Blackpool. And it occurred during the Second World War. Now, the lady originally came from Widnes, and in 1942, in the summer of 1942, she went to stay with her older sister, Eileen, who lived in a converted Victorian house just this side of Chester. Now, the sister lived in what was now the ground floor flat. And Joan, the lady in question, said when she arrived, she thought she was in heaven because it was the countryside, there were birds singing everywhere, there were trees, there were clean air, and there were no bombs falling. And all she had to do, basically, was look after her sister's toddler, who was just coming up to 2 years old. Now, for the first few days that she stayed there, she said there were no problems at all, nothing to make her feel even remotely nervous. But one thing she did notice was that every night, whoever it was who lived in the flat upstairs seemed to be pacing the floor endlessly all night long. When she asked her sister about this, her sister told her that there was an old man lived upstairs who suffered from insomnia. Now Joan, being a curious child, decided to check this for herself and climbed up the fire escape at the side of the house and peered in through the side window, only to see an empty flat. A few days later, something else began to happen. Doors began to swing open all the time. Even when they were locked, they seemed to manage to unlock themselves and swing open. A bedroom door used to slam back in the early hours of the morning. She tried to wedge it with a chair, but it rattled and rattled all night until, in the end, she asked her sister if she could move to another room. When she asked why the door rattled, she was told it was just breezes blowing through the house. The third thing that happened to her, and the thing that frightened her the most, was one summer's afternoon, she was bored. The toddler, the two-year-old Anne, was asleep. Eileen was reading her book, and Joan had absolutely nothing to do. And in the end, her sister said, "Look, why don't you go into my bedroom and have a root through me shoes and me clothes and do some dressing up?" Knowing perfectly well that that was the kind of thing that 10-year-old girls love to do. Now, she said she went into the bedroom, which is on the ground floor. There were French windows that were wide open, leading out onto the back lawn. Now, she said the room was warm, she could hear birds singing outside, and somewhere in the distance, somebody was mowing their lawn. Now, as she was rooting through the shoes, several things happened simultaneously. The first thing was that the sound of the bird song suddenly stopped. The sound of the lawnmower suddenly stopped. The room became intensely cold and also became very, very dark. So dark that she said it was as if it was suddenly night. The next thing she said was that she had a sense of somebody standing very close behind her. She could hear laboured breathing and feel an extremely cool breeze on the back of her neck. Now, she was about to turn round to see who it was when she said she heard a woman's voice, very, very lovely voice, very friendly voice, crystal clear, saying, "Don't look. Close your eyes. Turn round and run as fast as you can, and whatever you do, don't look back." She shut her eyes, she turned round and she ran. And she said as she ran through what felt like a wall of intense cold. Now, at this point, her sister's husband, who was in the Navy at the time, came home for a short leave. Now, he also heard the footsteps. He saw that he heard the doors opening and closing. And he became convinced that there was actually somebody in the house. So much so that apparently one night he got his service revolver and searched the entire flat from top to bottom. Now, things began to get so bad that in the end, Eileen, much against her will, because she was a devout sceptic in those days, decided to consult a spirit medium. So she got in contact with a medium who agreed to come to the house and conduct a seance. Now, the medium arrived, walked into the living room and promptly fainted. Now, when she came to, she refused point blank to stay in the house. She said under no circumstances would she conduct a seance, and she advised Eileen to vacate the flat the first chance she got. Now, when she was more closely questioned, she said the reason why they needed to leave was because there was a presence in that house that was extremely malevolent and liked to hurt children. But there was also another presence there that was trying to protect them. Now, the end of the summer came and Joan went back home to witness, but her sister stayed. There was a war on, there was a housing shortage, so finding another flat was not as easy as it sounded. But things, after the medium had been, things quietened down. In fact, nothing happened for months. Until, in December, when the weather had turned particularly cold, One night, or rather in the early hours of the morning, Eileen suddenly woke up. And she said, hovering at the end of her bed was a large blue light that she described as being egg-shaped. Now, she heard a voice in her head, a friendly female voice saying, "Come with me now. Come with me now. It's urgent." So she got up and followed the light. The light led her through the flat and out into the back garden, where she found her three-year-old lying on the lawn, gradually being covered with snow. Now, the child was still alive, but very, very cold. And afterwards, they realised that if they hadn't found her within another half hour, she would have frozen to death. And the following day, despite the housing shortage, Eileen packed her bags and took herself and her daughter and moved back into her mum and dad's house in Widnes and never returned.
Well, that's it for this week's podcast from the Roy Basnett Show on City Talk 105.9. Don't forget, you can join me live on the radio each weekday morning between 2 and 6am on City Talk across the North West and North Wales and on 105.9 FM or DAB Digital Radio. And of course, you can listen live online at citytalk.fm. That's it for now. We'll catch you next week.
City Talk 105.9, the best of Roy Basnett. Listen, and log on to the voice of Liverpool. City Talk 105.9.